just like to read a couple of different verses today. The first one in Matthew in chapter 6. Matthew chapter 6. And I've just titled my very short message today, The Care of Our God. The Care of Our God. Now, I sincerely hope that your week, this past week that we've just come through, ended the way that mine ended. I'd be thrilled if yours ended the way that mine ended, because mine ended, it couldn't have really ended any better than what it was. I would have to say that when I was looking at this message and kind of preparing it, a lot of the message was theoretical for most of the week, the care of our God. I had my points. It's easy to, in some way, put together a message. You put together a bunch of points and verses to go with them, but easy to prepare a sermon, tough to prepare a message. So it was fairly theoretical. Until something happened on Friday night that absolutely thrilled me. You see, on Monday, I'd gone over to drop something off to the neighbor, actually to help them with their irrigation pump. And there are new neighbors that have just moved into the area, and he says, well, what do you do for a living? So I told him, and he said, well, I think I could use you over at my place. Yeah, I'm sure you could. That's fine. Okay, so I went over, and yeah, it was supposed to be just kind of a, what should we do with our grass, 5 minutes, and at 10 o'clock, I was still over there. But that was fine. So he said, how do I adjust these sprinkler heads? And I said, well, I've got exactly the tool that you need. I said, it's at work. I may have one at home, but I'll get one over to you. Bring it tomorrow. And if I ever promise to bring you something tomorrow, don't expect it until at least the end of the week, or you'll have to remind me a couple of times. So I get a message on Friday evening when I'm trying to do something else. Did you remember that tool? Oh, of course not. I never. But I'll look in my shop, and I'll get right back to you. So I go into the shop, and I knew I'd seen it once upon a time, but if you know what my shop looks like right now, it's pretty tough to find things. You'd have to kind of be my wife to find something, and she wasn't there. So I go in, and I'm looking, and I can't find it's a screwdriver. That's what I'm looking for. It's silver tip and a green handle, and I couldn't find it. And then I thought, you know what? I should pray about it. So I bowed my head in the shop and said, Lord, I know that this isn't really important in the grand scheme of things, but I'd really like to find this tool. And most of all, I'm not really concerned about the tool, but I kind of just need a sense of thy presence. That's really what I'm looking for. I'm not really looking for the tool. But Lord, your presence hasn't been very much felt this week. Now, I admit that's my fault, not his. I'd just like just to see a demonstration of thy hand. I opened my eyes, and there was a piece of paper, 8.5 by 11, that Simon had drawn for my dad. Now, I don't think he ever told my dad it was in the shop, and it was laying right there. So I just, oh, okay, interesting. And of course, what was underneath that piece of paper was the tool that I was looking for. And I bowed my head again and thank the Lord. Now that tool, I didn't even pay for it. I get them free in a box of sprinklers. It wasn't worth anything. The neighbor didn't really need it. It rained today. His grass is still green. Everything's good. But why am I saying the story, or telling the story? Is because in preparing this little message today about the care of our God, it was, I admit, it was pretty theoretical. I have my 6 points, but until then, I realized that God cared. Did God care about a $3.50 Rainbird screwdriver? Yeah, he did. But what did he care more about? He cared for the fact that there was someone that just needed to be reminded that God cares. So that's what I'd just like to communicate in a little bit. I've got about 10 minutes, I think. For anyone that knows me, that's the toughest job up here. But we're going to read a couple of verses, Matthew chapter 6 and verse number 26. Matthew 6 and 26. All of these verses are familiar, so if I run short of time, I'm going to refer to them and not get you to turn to them. Matthew 6 and verse 26. Behold the fowls of the air. Let's skip down part of the verse. Yet your Father feedeth them. Are you not much better than they? Verse 28. And why take ye thought for raiment? Consider the lilies of the field. And we're familiar with that portion and the reference to Solomon in verse 29. Wherefore, verse 30, if God so clothe the grass of the field, which is today and tomorrow is cast into the oven, shall he not much more clothe you, O ye of little faith? And the O ye of little faith, for me this week, read, O me of little faith. Therefore, take no thought, saying, what shall we eat, or what shall we drink, or wherewithal shall we be clothed? Let's look at the second part of verse 32. For your heavenly Father knoweth that ye have need of all these things. Maybe we can take part of this verse, verse number 32, away from us today. For your heavenly Father knoweth that ye have need of all of these things. What can we take from Matthew chapter 6? First of all, the very simple point, but this is very, very simple, extremely simple. It's almost juvenile. It's so juvenile that I gloss right over top of it. But maybe if we can just take a step back today and appreciate some of these simple, simple truths. First of all, we learn from Matthew chapter 6 that God clothes our backs. 4 weeks ago today, I was taken by one of the missionaries in La Loma to an area where some older people live. There's about 35 of them that live in this area, and they've been individuals that most of them are widows. They've been taken to this area for protection, and the mission and the missionaries look after them. They're older people that have been accused of witchcraft. There's been no evidence that they were really involved in it. It's just that one of their relatives has died, and they've been accused of casting a spell on them, and relatives want to kill them. So the missionaries have taken them in, and there's 35 of them that live in this compound, and in this little village. And I was impressed that in this place, we kind of say, well, the missionaries look after them, and money that we send from the assembly goes to, yes, but the Lord looks after them. He clothes their back. And in these very, very humble little dwellings, there were people that were absolutely destitute, but they had clothes. My point here is that God meets our more obvious needs, those external needs. We take it for granted. We put on a set of clothes. We go into our closets, or if you're one of our kids, we've got too many clothes. What do we wear today? And it ends up being a bit of a, it's Sunday morning again, the clothes issue, right? We've got so much. But our God clothes our back. He looks after our most obvious needs. But we learn from Matthew chapter 6, not only does he clothe our backs, but he supplies our cupboards. I was impressed 4 weeks ago. We walk into this village with Tim Beer, this little village, and there's a whole set of, I guess we call them fourplexes. They're little buildings. And maybe the best way I could kind of describe what these people live in is if you've been to the Red River Exhibition and you see the housing conditions that some of those workers live in. They're just these little cubicles and these little trailers. That's kind of what they lived in, dirt floors. And they expressed thanksgiving, those people, sitting on the dirt floor, one of them with leprosy. She told us of how the rats the night before had come and were nibbling on her flesh. Couldn't feel it. And you could see how her limbs had been eaten away. But they expressed thanksgiving to Tim Beer for the food that they had. The food that they had is not what we'll probably enjoy for lunch today. But whether we're in Winnipeg or whether we're in Zambia, the Lord clothes our backs, and he does supply our cupboards. Let's go over to Matthew chapter 10. Matthew chapter 10 and verse number 29. Actually, for sake of time, I'll just have to stick with verse number 30. But the very hairs of your head are numbered. Not only does he clothe our backs and he supplies our cupboards, but he numbers our hairs. Now, I'm not at the age yet where I'm too worried about how much hair I have or I don't have. Maybe that day will come. But what's my point here? If the Lord supplies our cupboards, it means that he is concerned with meeting our physical needs. But when it comes to the point that he numbers our hairs, I'd like us to notice that there is no detail of our lives that is insignificant to God. I don't place much more value on my hair than I do on that $3.50 Rainbird adjustment tool that I was looking for on Friday. No big deal. Go to get a haircut every... But the Lord knows every one of our hairs. Why? I don't know. It's because he knows everything about us, because he's made us, because he maintains us. He knows everything about us, and even those things that are so insignificant, or at least to me at my stage of life with a relatively full head of thick hair. But every part of our lives that we consider even insignificant matter to God. If we were to go, and I'm not for the sake of time, because I know that I could be in trouble here. We went to the book of Psalms, chapter 37, a verse that we've heard quoted here before. The steps of a good man are ordered by the Lord. Not only does he clothe our backs, not only does he supply our cupboards, not only does he number our hairs, but he orders our steps. What does that mean? Yesterday I was working at the owner's place, the owner of the company that we work for, and they've got a very, very large, probably about a 12-foot waterfall in their backyard. Beautiful place. And it's all full of boulders. And my job was the humble job of weeding, my favorite job. So I'm stepping from boulder to boulder. Now, these aren't large boulders. These are small ones, and most of them are round. So you step from one to the other, and what you're looking for is you're looking for one that is relatively stable, one that's not going to roll and you're going to twist your ankle. And sometimes one does, and then you hope at least the next one is. You're trying to order your steps. You don't want to fall. The Lord orders our steps. If we were to continue on in Psalm chapter 37 and to read in verse number 24, it says, even though he fall, and there's been times when I've fallen on that waterfall, even though he fall, he shall not be utterly cast down. Isn't that proof of our caring God? He orders our steps. If we were to carry on, and we went to Psalm chapter 56, we would read a verse such as this. I pretty much have it, that he bottles our tears. I'm going to read it because the verse completely slips my mind right now. Psalm chapter 56, or Psalm 56, and verse number 8. 56 and 8. Thou tellest my wanderings. Thou put thou my tears in thy bottle. Are they not in thy book? I remember 20 years ago going to Taylorside Youth Conference. And I don't remember who the speakers were supposed to be that year. I do know that this one scheduled speaker made it, and the other scheduled speaker had to bow out soon before. So they'd asked Ross Vanstone to be able to fill in. And there's probably no better person to fill in last minute than someone like Ross. And he spoke on a message that weekend that I've never forgotten. Now, you ask me, how many people's messages do you remember 20 years later? Very few. But he spoke on this. He had three sessions. Session number one, Christians that try. Session number two, Christians that cry. Session number three, Christians that die. And I'll tell you, that's some of the best ministry that I've ever heard. I've heard lots of ministry. All of it's good. But it's ministry that stuck. Christians that try. Christians that cry. And Christians that die. In the fact that he orders our steps, he delights in setting our direction. But when it comes to the fact that he bottles our tears, he is interested in our emotional needs. And he takes interest, he takes account in things that we would consider to be secondary. I'm going to ask you a very, very personal question. I'm going to look down, I'm not going to look at you, and you don't need to look at me. But when last did you cry? I don't mean you're a bit upset. When last did you cry and it was tough to control it? When last did you go into your bedroom so that your kids didn't see it? We've all been there. He bottles our tears. When we're weeping, are we concerned about the liquid that exits our eyes? No, we're concerned about our emotions. Our emotions have been hurt. Something has happened that has been devastating. And we try with all of our might and all of our power and all of our resolve to be able to stand up and to be tough and to be able to carry on. As we call it, that stiff upper lip. But when we're no longer able to and the tears flow, we're not concerned about the tears, but we're concerned about the emotion behind the tears. Can I ask you today if the Lord is concerned about our tears and bottles our tears? Is he not concerned with our emotions? I must close. He clothes our back. He supplies our cupboards. He numbers our hairs. He orders our steps. He bottles our tears. But Isaiah chapter 42, he holdeth our hand. To me, that's precious. Isn't that where our brother Dunsire left us this morning at the end of the worship meeting, that we are held in his hand? I fully agree. But I just like to take a slightly different look at it in the sense that not only does he hold us in his hand, but he holds our hand. I'm sure that most of us here have had the privilege and the opportunity of visiting an older saint, one that's shut in and no longer able to get out to the assembly meetings. One of those saints, or maybe it's a family member, they're saved and have been on the road to heaven a long time, and it's coming time for them to go home, home to heaven. And we go and visit. And as we drive, we say, well, what are we going to say? And we put together, you know, some verses, and we try to be prepared. And we visit, and the conversation tails off. They don't say anything. Even people like me are stuck and don't know what to say. And you sit there. And haven't you had that time when that older sister has just reached out her hand? That hand that is thin, that hand that is frail, that hand that is relatively cold, and they grasp yours. And you sit in a nursing home or beside a hospital bed. A younger man sitting beside the bed of an older woman. And what are you doing? You're holding their hand. Why? Why are they interested in that? You'd think that there should be something that we can say. I mean, there's so much that we can say. We've got the whole Word of God. And that's true. I'm not taking away from that. But God meets our need, our inner need of companionship and friendship. What is that older sister desiring? You know what? Sometimes I think that if they could really say what they wanted, is they just say, you know what, Tim, be quiet. Cut the chat. I'm just glad you came to visit. And they hold your hand and you hold theirs. What are they seeking? Just simply companionship and fellowship. Is that what we desire of our God? That's what he desires from us. For most of this week, I never held the Lord's hand. I was completely oblivious to the fact that he held mine. But there was a time on Friday afternoon when I bowed my head and prayed for a tool that I was convinced again that our God cared. He clothes our back. He fills our cupboards. He numbers our hair. He orders our steps. He bottles our tears. And yes, He does hold our hand.